Morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm John Berry, registration number 10401, representing the appellants, John and Janice Windsor. Mr. and Mrs. Windsor are also present.
Can you hold up? Is the sound system working for the podium? Try it again, counsel.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm hoping it's working at this point, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
The trial court found that Mr. Osmus had established all elements of a prescriptive easement through Tract E on the Windsor's property. However, the court did not define a specific 18-year period of continuous use. Because it could not, the evidence simply was not there. Rather, what the trial court believed was that intermittent use over a period of 35 years should be sufficient. The land of Mr. Osmus is approximately 40 acres, consisting of farmland. It has no improvements. Mr. Osmus acknowledged that he rarely, if ever, went to the property. He simply had no reason to. Rather, he leased the property to a number of farmers over the years. Some of these farmers testified at trial. Most notably, one farmer, Kenton Brewer, did not testify. He farmed the Osmus property from 1976 to 1980. There was simply no evidence of the use of the roadway in that time period. And the court, in its order, recited, from 1976 to 1980, it is unclear whether tenants farmer Mr. Brewer used the roadway over tracts C and E. Testimony at trial indicated that Mr. Brewer had access to the Osmus land from the west and that the washout area was impassable.
Are you asking us to hold as a matter of law that the lack of evidence of use for a four-year period precludes a prescriptive easement? I mean, assuming that the 4 years would come out of the 18.
Yes, sir. This is not continuous use.
Well, what about evidence from which it may be inferred that Mr. Osenhaus believes that he had a right to use the property during the 76 to 80, as evidenced by some of the other documents that he recorded?
What the court noted, it was an instrument prepared, executed by Mr. Osmus, recorded, titled a continuation of an easement agreement, recorded in 1974, another recorded in 1978. One of the important elements of a prescriptive easement is described in Weisegger versus Harper, and that is that there must be open and notorious use or claim. Recording an instrument in the county records arguably provides constructive notice, but it does not provide the needed open and notorious use or notice. Important here, Your Honor, is what Weisinger v. Harbor recites, that to satisfy the open and notorious element, the use must be sufficiently obvious to apprise the owner of the serving estate in the exercise of reasonable diligence that another is making use of the burdened land so that the owner may object.
Well, and this may be a nuance, but humor me. Are you arguing lack of use during this four-year period, or are you arguing that use, if any, wasn't open and notorious, or are you arguing both?
Both, Your Honor. There was no evidence of use in this period to the extent that the court relied upon Mr. Osmus somehow claiming a right to use without using it and without providing any open and notorious notice of that to Mr. and Mrs. Windsor, provides them with no opportunity to know that someone's claiming or using the road such that they must interfere with that use.
Well, wasn't there, I mean, recognizing the extent we're bound by the lower court findings, it wasn't there evidence of use up to approximately 1976 and then again in the 1980s?
Yes, it was.
Okay, are you disputing that use does not meet the open and notorious requirement? The pre-1976 and the post-1980, are you disputing that the use was lacked open and notorious?
No, Your Honor, that was open and notorious.
Okay, well, so that, then doesn't it really come down to the tension between essentially no use for the four-year period versus some evidence in the record that Mr. Ozenhus still believed he and his tenants had the right to use?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Again, I think the important distinction is constructive notice by recorded documents versus actual notice. The court.
Why would you need actual notice if there was open and notorious use up to 1976?
Up to 1976, if 18 years going backwards from 1976 existed.
No, no, I'm assuming that the 4 years does come out of the 18-year okay. period.
Well, again, otherwise, there has to be some notice in this period that Mr. and Mrs. Windsor has to be apprised of the fact that Mr. Ozenhus claims that he has a prescriptive easement or rights to the road during this period or open and notorious use. And it is lacking, I think, because of simply recording instruments does not provide anything other than constructive notice, not open and notorious use or notice to Mr. and Mrs. Windsor.
But does the notice separate from use have to be open and notorious?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any law that says that addresses that.
Okay.
I'm not aware of prepared arguments. I'm aware of no law which provides that constructive notice is tantamount to open and notorious. In other words, constructive notice doesn't apprise the Windsors that they better do something within an 18-year period or they could be subject to a prescriptive easement. In fact, the court noted in 1981 and 1982 there was an exchange of letters between the Windsors and Mr. Ozenhus, where the court believed Mr. Ozenhus brought to the Windsors' attention, I claim an easement in this road. It is undisputed that in 1996, the Windsors barricaded the road by planting the trees. That provides only, at best, a 15-year period of use. I submit that the Windsors did the proper thing. When apprised of a claim of easement, they interrupted that use. There has been no use of the road since 1996. So the argument, Your Honor, is that the recording of the instruments by Mr. Ozenhus is simply, while he might claim to himself that he has rights in the road, there is no open and notorious disclosure of that to Mr. and Mrs. Windsor to allow them to then obstruct the use. The court also believed incorrectly that intermittent use for a period of 35 years should be sufficient to constitute an 18-year continuous period. I believe the trial court misconstrued what intermittent meant. Intermittent is, in this context, would provide that the road be not used each and every day for a continuous 18-year period to constitute a prescriptive easement. But intermittency cannot mean that 4 years are avoided during the course of an 18-year period. To allow that to occur would mean that the word uninterrupted in the definition of the elements of prescriptive easement would be rendered meaningless. Perhaps the most glaring error in the trial court was even after the court found a prescriptive easement, it failed to limit the nature and scope of the easement.
Did you raise that below?
Yes, Your Honor. The Wright versus Horse Creek Ranches limits the prescriptive easement, stating that it is fixed by the use to which it was created.
How did you raise the issue of the scope below? I know the 20-foot was argued, but did you separately call to the trial court's attention the need to make, you know, pertain possibly limitations based on historical use, seasonality, agriculture?
Your Honor, I can't independently recall. I mean, I was in trial court already, and there was no prescriptive easement whatsoever. I think you're independent of whether there's an obligation to say, well, if you are to grant an easement, you must limit it. I believe that's a part of the trial court anyway, that the court can't just simply say, there's been some use, I find prescriptive easement, it's that's wide, four-lane highway or whatever the applicant may wish. It has to be limited by what the evidence is before the court. And in our trial, the evidence was clearly that this was used only for farming purposes. So if there were to be any restrictive easement, the trial court should have provided that in fact that is limited to solely the use for farming purposes. In the cross appeal, Mr. Ozis advances a claim that the Windsors are stopped to deny that he has an easement over Tract E. Importantly here is the fact that the Windsors took no action which would have caused Mr. Ozis to materially change his position. Pagel v. Ryman recites the elements for such estoppel and would require that the Windsors cause Mr. Ozis to change his position prejudicially. Windsors did not. Mr. Ozis purchased his property in 1969. The Windsors purchased theirs nearly 10 years later in 1978. They did not cause him to purchase the property through any action on their part. Mr. Ozis also advances that the ineffective grant by the deed for Mr. Yelp, again, Mr. Yelp did not own Tract E, could not burn it, could not transfer it. But Mr. Ozis argues that that ineffective grant should nonetheless be viewed as valid and effective because Mr. Yelp could have adversely possessed Tract E. As evidence of this, Mr. Ozis brought forth aerial photos from 1950 forward showing the use of pathway. Without other explanation of use, that is presumed to be adverse. But that is all, the only element, which could be presumed of the need for prescriptive easement. Does not prove continuity, does not prove the nature of the use made, does not even prove who used the road.
Also doesn't show who owned it.
Yes, true. No one knows what the outcome of an adverse possession action by Mr. Yelp might have been. The court cannot elevate an ineffective deed from Yelp to now be one which is valid because of what might have been in an adverse possession claim by Mr. Yelp. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, please.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Randy Williams, registration 6832, attorney for Mr. Ozenhuis. I would like to spend most of my time talking about our position that the court did not need to reach a prescriptive easement decision in this case for several reasons, but that his findings in fact for the time period that he looked at were accurate, supported by the evidence, and supported by the law. Briefly, with respect to the questions that Judge Webb was directing, I believe that Leeson versus Phillips case answers the questions that the judge raised here, because that clearly states that this intermittent use of an easement under claim of right that you continue to assert, even if it extends over a long period of time and perhaps has gaps, still is sufficient to satisfy the requirements for adverse possession.
What was the longest gap in Phillips?
It's not clear from the case, Your Honor.
What is the longest gap in any case you found?
I'm not aware of any except one case which indicated that there was a use of a roadway once in a period of 9 years, and that was insufficient. I think that was the Martini case, as I recall. Other than that...
So do you have any cases indicating the lack of use for 4 years is not dispositive on a continuous use argument?
I don't have cases either way, Your Honor. I think the only case that really talks about it with much detail, at least in the period of time we're looking at here, is the Gleason case.
How about the argument that counsel makes that to claim that a four-year gap is intermittent, it's really to decimate the term uninterrupted?
I don't think that's accurate if you look at the time period involved, especially Gleason was the same way. It was a 27-year period. In this case, actually it's 28. In this case, we also have a 28-year period. Ben Hines, the first farmer that was working for Mr. Ozen, who started farming the property for the predecessor, Mr. Yock, in 1968. So he started using it in 68 and the use continued since then.
But if we take out the 1976 to 1980, then you can't have 18 years, correct?
Not using the time period that the trial court used commencing with Mr. Ozenhus's acquisition of the property. You would not, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I understand your theory to be that Mr. Ozenhus's belief that he had a right to use the easement was ongoing, even if there was sporadic, even no use from 76 to 80. But how did the Windsors have actual notice, as opposed to constructive notice, of Mr. Ozenhus's position?
First, the existence of the roadway, and also, as the court pointed out below, during that four-year period, there were still irrigation facilities to the south of this property that had to be accessed by use of this roadway across the Windsor property. And as the court indicated, there was an implication that that is what occurred with respect to that four-year period, although the court did not make a finding that that had occurred.
And there was no evidence that it had?
No.
Okay.
Other than the other farmers who testified that the only way to irrigate the property was to use that road to get access to the irrigation facilities.
And what, to open a ditch? Or?
There's a pump. There's a lake and then a pump system on the south side. So that's the way they accessed it. And so the implication is that that's what Mr. Greer did as well, because he would have had to use that roadway to get irrigation water.
When did the Windsors acquire their property interest?
1978.
Okay, and they wouldn't have had notice by virtue of their own deed that they had that would have referenced an easement over that property?
Yes, they would have.
Well, it seems to me that's more than just record notice. It seems to me as when you hand somebody a deed, it's my deed, they don't have notice of it.
Well, that's our position, that they do, and that they were bound by that. In fact, the deed from Mr. Yock to Mr. Ozenhus specifically called out this easement. The deed to the Simons, who were predecessors of the Windsors, specifically called out the Ozenhus easement. The deed from Simons to the Natives, who were the immediate predecessors to the Windsors, specifically called out the Ozenhus easement. And then finally, the deed from Pineda to Windsor said it was subject to.
Okay, they acquired it in 1978.
Correct.
From the period of time they acquired it, 1978 to 1996, would that have been 18 years? Would that have been almost 18 years? Would that have been over 18 years?
Well, it would have been almost exactly 18 years, Your Honor.
Almost, but not quite?
I can't remember the exact date of the deed. I believe it did satisfy the 18-year time frame up until the time they shut off access in 1996, but I don't remember the date of the Pineda-Windsor deed. Where I think the judge did make an error in his analysis on the adverse possession issue is that he didn't go back far enough. As the record shows, the roadway that serves the Ozenhus property was in existence, in 30 years, in 1950. And as I indicated, Mr. Hines, the farmer that was the first we could find farming that property, said he was using it in 1968. Under the Lively versus Wick case, we don't know who built that road or who owned that property at the time, but the Lively v. Wick case says that in those circumstances where you have a roadway that's in use and serving a property and you don't know who built it, the presumption is that it's an adverse use to anybody else. So by the time that Mr. Yock conveyed the property to Mr. Ozenhus in 1969, the 18-year statute had already run by a year. So he did have, by virtue of adverse possession, title to the tract E and the easement that was given to Mr. Ozenhus under the deed. So we believe that the time period you should be looking at is this 1950 period, which vested ownership in Mr. Yock and then made his deeds valid to all persons down below it.
I mean, you say vested ownership in Yock.
Yes.
Do you mean vested a prescriptive easement, or do you mean vested actual ownership?
In this case, I don't think it matters, because all Mr. Yock conveyed was an easement to Mr. Ozenhus. He didn't convey a fee title to him. But I would submit that, at least under those earlier cases, that adverse use with the roadway may have vested the fee title as well.
Can a user of an easement convey title to that easement before a court rules that a prescriptive easement has arisen?
Yes, at least I believe so. Because the statute cuts off the time frame within which anyone can contest that ownership. So you've actually barred someone from objecting to title at that point once the 18 years has run.
Well, is that the same as saying you could convey the easement that has not yet been judicially determined?
I believe so.
Is there any cases on that?
Not that I'm aware of, other than all these adverse possession cases where people have continuously argued about fence lines, tacking on the predecessor's ownership and use of the property. So you have many of those cases that say you've got your predecessor's use, you don't necessarily have title to it, but you tack on that use and you're able to convey that property. The second reason I think the judge didn't need to rely on a prescriptive easement is a pretty ancient principle, which is when you take title and possession from your predecessors in title, you're bound by the recitals in that deed. You don't be able to come back and say, okay, I got the benefit of a claim of title, I got the benefit of possession, but now I don't like this particular part of my deed. I don't want to recognize the validity of this easement, even though I've taken title. And this goes to many of those cases I cited in my brief, but I think what it really boils down to is the U.S. Supreme Court case from 1879, which was cited, and that's the Cole or Cowell versus Springs Company. And in that case, Mr. Cole had a deed that was subject to a reverter if the property that he had was used for alcohol, and he violated that condition. The prior owner exercised the right of the reverter and brought an ejectment action, and Mr. Cole defended on the basis that the prior owner didn't have power or right to own the property. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, you can't delve into that. You have accepted the benefits of that, you've acquired possession, and you cannot now go back and question that validity. You can't reject the ownership. Otherwise, you'd be in a position of accepting the benefit, holding possession, and then not being able to recover possession when it's violated. So that's an ancient precedent, and I think these cases follow that, including Colorado cases, the Page case, where the person with the mineral interest attempted to attack the mineral interests that were acquired by him on the basis of conveyances that were not of record. And the court there held, even though they're not in real property records, you could have found them elsewhere, and you're bound by those even though you may not have known about them.
If we were to resolve the prescriptive easement question in your favor, do we need to get to the estoppel by deed issue?
Well, I would like you to get there, because I think that's what the case requires, and that gives us a clear right and title to that easement that we don't have to fight about down the road.
That's right. If you were to prevail on estoppel by deed, there wouldn't be any issue about the scope of the easement, would there?
There wouldn't be an issue about the scope. There would still be the court's determination as to width,
right,
but no issue as to scope.
That's correct.
Unless the court has other questions or points that I might clarify, I think that's all I have for you at this point.
Well, since you've got a couple more minutes, I just want to go back and ask you again, you know, a four-year gap, how does that equal continuous use for purposes of the prescriptive easement?
Okay. I think that, again, I'm going to have to go back to the Gleason versus Phillips case, and I think the touchstone there is that you have to continuously assert that right, and that's what happened in this case. Mr. Rosenthal has always done that. And secondly, the other keystone is that it's used whenever desired. Over this 3 to 5 year period, the easement was used whenever desired. It may be that it wasn't needed at any particular time. For example, Mr. Bruner, who was farming property to the west, and had other access for farm equipment. But that doesn't mean it was terminated. It just wasn't necessary to use it at that point. When it became necessary to use it again, and when Mr. Rosenhuis's farmers desired to use it, they did. And that's the keystone, I think, in leasing the Phillips.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, note that the trial court's ruling provides that the deed by which Windsor title of property was recorded September 13, 1978. To the extent that the Windsors could be held to any notice by virtue of that, after the farming season of 1978, the last use of the roadway would have been in 1995 because the Windsors barricaded Track E in 1996. I don't think there is a sufficient 18-year period, if my math serves me correctly.
Is there a month in 1986 they barricaded it?
I don't believe there is. I don't believe there is in the record. But
I was going to say, can you drive? Were the plants, were the trees little? Were they big that got planted? You know what? Forget that question. I'm eating up your time.
I don't know. It's in the record, Your Honor. They're big now. The appellee wishes his court to jump through a lot of hoops by viewing aerial photographs from 1950 onward to provide that Mr. Yauch effectively or could have adversely possessed the property. All that those photos demonstrate under the law is a presumption of adversity. It does not provide continuity, does not provide the other necessary elements. This court, nor the trial court, in a position to determine that had Mr. Yauch pursued an adverse possession claim at that time, he would have prevailed. There is simply no way the court can substitute that ruling now. What the appellee wishes this court to do is to, by virtue of assuming that Mr. Yauch succeeded in an adverse possession claim, that can therefore elevate the ineffective deed to become effective. In other words, it now provides Mr. Osnos with an easement prescribed in the deed, even though that was found by the court to be ineffective under the law. Mr. Yauch was incapable of transferring title to Track E. He simply owned no interest in it. That would be a new, entirely new area of law for the court to determine Mr. Yauch effectively owned the property by adverse possession and could convey title and could burden it with an easement.
Well, is the issue that he had title in the 50s, or simply that Yauch could have established a prescriptive easement, and therefore, because he could establish a prescriptive easement, he could convey the easement rights to his successors in title, even if he never owned Track D? Isn't that the argument?
But he didn't take the step to have a prescriptive easement declared by a court. It's impossible to know whether all of the elements were present. Perhaps Mr. Yauch would have testified that he had permission to utilize the road. Perhaps it was for farming purposes. We simply can't assume that he would have prescriptive easement. Therefore, his deed some years later should be viewed as being valid and effective.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. Opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.
Thank you.